From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Pennies Going in Raw is a production of iHeartRadio. The opinions expressed in the following podcast are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security or investment product. It is only intended to provide education and entertainment about the financial industry and the stock market. Enjoy!
On this episode of Pennies Going in Raw, we discuss DD versus speculation versus a rumor.
You find out life's this game of pennies.
Oh, you guys know we only have a 40% runner. Hello? 40% right is a f***ing killing.
We've been compliant for too long. It's time we go to war.
I don't have a Roth.
Q knows so much about the market that his brain doesn't have enough room for grammar.
Hey, who told me about IDEX? It's going up a shit ton now.
Rob, 4%, baby.
No way.
4%.
You asked the exact same question with two words different.
It's like, fuck, man, I just got dick whipped for like 20%, and now that f***er's up like 50.
I bet Warren Buffett never did that.
I'm just making this voice memo to call out unusual whales to a fight.
The pennies we need are everywhere around us.
Pennies, pennies,
pennies. Going in raw.
Featuring Dan, Deity of Dips,
and Hugh Honey.
Produced by Vinny
and Christian.
Let's go, baby.
Welcome back to another episode of Pennies Going in Raw. Today is Wednesday, December the 1st. We have 1 month left of this trading year. It's been a wild one. But, how do you think this is going to end? I mean, last year we saw the crazy run-up in December that ended up leading to such an insane January, capped off by the meme stock run, basically saying, hey, everyone, here's your tax money. Do you think we're going to get that real hot December? I mean, we saw the small caps kind of take it slow a little bit after their crazy run. Are we getting them back?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, we have about 1,000 stocks that are underneath $5 a share and 100, mid-100, but almost 200 stocks that are underneath a dollar. I mean, there were a few months ago that we were talking about there were zero stocks underneath a dollar. So you can see that small caps have really gotten hit. I always believe inside the Christmas rally. I know a lot of people, always say that's like, you know, bullshit and stuff, but I truly do believe inside the Christmas rally, mostly because it gives a catalyst.
Well, I mean, you know, my mom always told me if I don't believe, I won't get any presents. So it's like, I have to believe the Christmas rally is going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. Tomato Picasso, you know?
It's, yeah, right.
Yeah, so I think like pretty much, I personally believe inside the Christmas rally, like I said, because it's a fundamental reason, you know, tax lot savings, buying up before the end of the year, after the tax lot's selling. And then on top of that, you know, everyone loves a little Christmas magic. So overall, I do think that we get the Christmas rally. I do think that inside small caps that will also rally pretty hard. Just because the fact that, you know, they've gotten killed. And so at a certain point, we go from trading, you know, maybe 10 times revenue to only trading, you know, maybe one times revenue. And then now you're seeing stocks who, you know, they're only hitting the benchmark on their earnings reports and they're flying 20-30% because they're down 84, 85, 90% inside the past few months.
A Okay, well, just because you did say Picasso, do you know when Picasso died? Like, around what year? This is always crazy to me. I mean, just give, like, a 100-year range. Whether it be 1400, whatever.
1200.
1973. This man flew on airplanes, drove cars. Yeah, I know. That fact is always insane to me. I'm like, I thought he was around with Mozart and, like, Beethoven and shit, but no.
Shit.
Our parents were around with them.
But did he die old? Or like what?
Like 90 years old. I mean, he didn't live to like 400. I mean,
yeah, all right.
Yeah, no, because I mean, just start painting, man. I would love a little Christmas run. I think most people need it after the past few weeks. I know you also wanted to talk about Microsoft before we get into the main part of the episode. Their CEO just sold half of his position of around $285 million. Since he became CEO in 2014, the stock's up 780%. So I feel like he has a little reason, you know, he can justify selling a little bit. And also, where he lives in Washington, if you make over 250K, I think it's their state tax is 7K on or 7% on capital gains now. So he's got a couple reasons to do it, and still has an absolute ton of Microsoft shares. If you look at the chart, it's been going between 330 and 338 on big spikes. But what do you kind of take of all the news? And do you think that's anything more than just the same thing Elon Musk did, but less tweety about it?
Yeah, first off, diamond fucking hands. All right. What a pansy selling off half his position. No. So there's two things that I'll say about this. One being, I think it's interesting because Microsoft, the CEO sold half his position. That's why like everyone's, I don't want to say freaking out, but like that's why it made the news. but other CEOs are selling part of their stakes inside their companies, you know, Merck, some of the pharmaceuticals, stuff like that. And I find it interesting, you know, everybody always knows before retail. What I mean by that is like, you know, the senators and the, you know, congressmen and now CEOs. I just find it really interesting.
Nancy
that
Pelosi.
Like, Yeah. I just find it interesting that like first kind of, you know, like the Fed was like sold all their positions. What was it? 2 months ago. And they were like, oh, this is a conflict of interest. And they sell all of their stocks, you know, when the market's up, what, 140% for the past 16 months. And then now you have CEOs selling off. So I almost like want to say like, maybe this is like, you know, starting
Do I need
break
to sell
top
off?
In. Yeah. That's what I mean. Like, yeah, obviously there we can still go higher and we will go higher. But the thing is that like, you know, around 500, do we start to like question if because there's a lot of stories, like obviously nobody's going to come out and say anything. But I just find it really interesting that like, you know, the powerful people of the world are selling off their positions. And I mean, listen, the Microsoft CEO, yes, the stock's up 700%. But I mean, he sold 280 million worth. The hell is he buying?
With all the new tax shit coming out and everything.
Yeah, but that's still, I mean, at the end of the day,
He wanted to diversify.
You're the head of the company. You should be all in. Fuck
okay.
that.
I don't think that's a very smart thing to do. I mean, you believe in a stock a lot. I mean, you feel like you're the head of a company. You're not going
to Yeah, but
all
I
in.
Don't run. Yeah, but see, here's the thing is that I just can't release a press release or, like, you know, start making cars and shit. Microsoft.
Well, maybe he feels like a $2.5 trillion market cap is a little high.
Then he should have tweeted that like Elon Musk and took it to $10 trillion.
Jesus Christ. That is a wild move. But yeah, you know, I mean, something to think about. But, you know, all these big dogs selling stocks between him and then Elon. But, you know, it's just diversifying, man. Maybe he wants to do some small caps with us. He just needs to free up some cash.
I could give him a few good small caps.
Yeah?
Yeah, bro. I could send him a few this way. No, but it'll be interesting because, like I said, is that this is definitely talking more broad. But, you know, the big boys are selling, you know, so we'll see what happens.
From BBC Radio 4. Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
All right, well, the main topic of this episode is DD versus speculation versus rumor. I mean, it's an issue you see on Twitter a lot because, I mean, DD is one thing. And if you really want reliable DD, you got to do it yourself. And then you got to think about, hey, speculation and rumor. Speculation leads to rumor, and sometimes it gets out of control. I mean, it may start as, hey, UAVS is making drones. That's a fact. And then you'll be like, okay, well, Amazon is looking for drones. You can speculate that Amazon will, you know, buy out UAVS. Well, then, you know, the rumor gets around that UAVS is saving the Amazon, and now they're doing shit in South America. You know, shit gets fucking confusing fast sometimes, especially when social media is involved. So I think maybe going into how not to get caught in the rumors and not how to over leverage yourself or overdo it on just a speculatory thing.
So the biggest thing to note is that everything is speculation and everything is a rumor until, you know, it hits the news wire, because that would be insider trading, obviously. So I think that that's really important to note, because it's really easy, and there's a really thin line between, you know, speculation, which is like, hey, Dan and I are both dudes, you know, Amazon is also like the number one and the number two are both dudes, like they have to be working
that
together.
That is a terrible example.
I'm just saying that, like,
that's
but like
not,
no that
that's
is
not what
because
speculation is.
I'm saying that, like, that's a rumor, you know, like if it's like you know, you see an Amazon package behind me, you know, like two dudes, like, there's the other thin line where, like, what if I worked at Amazon for 25 years and I was Bezos's roommate, and I was, and you, what'd you do? And you were, you know, you were an Amazon worker, and then you went to Microsoft, and then you helped build stuff for Amazon. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's a very thin line between speculation, rumor, and good DD. And at the end of the day, it all comes down to managing your risk, because that's going to be the most important thing by far.
So I think the main thing I think we need to go over is how to kind of avoid the speculation and the rumors and get kind of it for yourself. So if you see speculation, sort of like what we saw last year with the UAVS and Amazon, or even with Fisker and Apple cars. Hey, Apple's releasing an electric car. There's this electric car, and you got Henrik Fisker tweeting out fucking Apple emojis. You know, you get all that. And even, you know, in this day and age where social media, where even the CEOs will play into this shit, you know, yeah. At what point do you have to say, hey, am I being, you know, ran amok? Am I being run astray? Am I being fooled?
And that's that's one of the biggest things now about the rise up of social media, is that CEOs are all over Twitter and stuff, and they're propping up, you know, I mean, and even to a certain degree, Elon Musk, you know, even to a certain degree, you know, he's slick with it. Like, he does to a certain degree prop, you know, maybe not now, but in the beginning was propping up Tesla and was always giving like hints and stuff. And those didn't always come to fruition. And so with all the, I mean, let's take AHT, for example. Like, the CEO was tweeting every day, multiple times a day, and it got investors excited, and they loved the engagement and all that. And then they did a reverse split. Like, it's little things like that where, you know, CEOs are really playing into this, and it makes it a lot more difficult to not, as we say, drink the Kool-Aid. Because it's one thing when you know, you're looking at different filings and stuff, and you're connecting a few dots. You know, like, that's one thing. But then when you have, like, someone from inside the company, especially, you know, let's take the CEO, kind of feeding into that, that's where it makes it so damn hard because you want to believe. But at the end of the day, they're looking out for their own interest. They're trying to prop up the stock for any number of reasons. And it's just important to understand that, you know, like I have a sticky note that says, you know, a CEO is the top cheerleader. That's all he is. You know, he only cheers when it's good, and he doesn't break up with you until he basically has to, until you're going to find out anyway. So now that being said, you can also have a CEO who downplays too much and doesn't get investors excited. So I think that pretty much the best way to handle most CEOs and even like most investor decks, stuff like that, is that if there's no time, one of the biggest things that goes into my DD and timelines and all that different stuff my different swings and stuff and like my matrix is the timeline, because the timeline is important because I can stick that to them. You know, like I can say, hey, okay, if they want to be at 100 million revenue per quarter, then they need to be at 75 million by this quarter to even have a chance at hitting it for next quarter, you know, or if they say that they're going to have this new product available that, you know, December 1st, then I can say to them, okay, then they better have a marketing strategy, or they better employ a marketing team if they don't have, you know, obviously they don't have a marketing program, by, you know, maybe 4 months out, 5 months out to develop a strategy and stuff. And so it's one of those things where if there's a timeline, there's kind of like a checklist. You know, it's not just like, oh, here's the product, there you go, throw it on shelves. You know, there's other things that you can look for, you know, to build that thesis around that. So that's one of the biggest things I look at. And then, and like I said, is that not really believing the hype that's just behind words. So, you know, I'm not going to mention the company, but the goat's water and all that nonsense about we have the goats. Like I honestly didn't understand what when the company says like we have goats that are coming on board, we just can't tell you yet. Like there's no substance to that. Like I don't even know who the hell you're talking about, you know. And it's one of those things where like you just felt like you're being strung along. That's one of the hardest things. So I always try.
Rumors really hit the people that have like these get rich quick mentality, mm-hmm. because. You know, you want to believe that Tom Brady will be fucking shotgunning next level water, you know, at the Super Bowl halftime show. But, you know, chances are it's not going to be like that. I mean, and the thing is, especially with, you know, like we've been saying, if someone gives you like, hey, this is why this company is good, it's always good to like, hey, first, let's be reasonable. And then also like going into it yourself to do your own due diligence. And like, let's say you see like one of these rumors, how can you kind of try your best to clarify, you know, whether it's true or not? And less so if a CEO tweets it, but more just, you know, you see it on Twitter. Someone says, hey, this is going to go to 20. Here's why, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. And that's the thing is that it's super easy to drink the Kool-Aid. So, you know, stick to the hard facts, stick to the, hey, if I say if I'm a CEO, and the CEO says, hey, we are going to do this, you know, that's when I like to email them. That's when I like to email investor relations. You know, if you're going to put a promise out there or you're going to put something into the stratosphere like that, then I want to know what it is. You know, like what are your expected sales? You know, are you hiring? Where do you get these numbers from? Walk me through this. You know, none of that should be, you know, too difficult for them to answer. And if it's kind of like they answer your emails or they, or, you know, hell, call them, show up, I don't care. And if they can't really give an answer, then a little red flag should be going up, because at the end of the day, yeah, I think I talked about one of my biggest losses this year was we may potentially in the future might have top line data. And it's like, what does that even mean? Like you're just talking in circles. So that's the biggest thing really, when it comes down to it, is that there's how things are said and how things are. And at the end of the day, if there's no concrete evidence, because that line is so thin between, you know, rumor, DD, speculation, like that's really like blurred, because you don't know, because you're not supposed to know, but you can pick up those breadcrumbs. Like I think it was, and this was impossible to know, but I think it was last time that Tesla did a reverse split, Elon Musk tweeted it out at like 12 or I mean not 12 at 8:10 or something, And then August 10th, he announced like the reverse split. And there was like other connections and stuff like that. But like my point is that you know, that could have also just been a coincidence. Like nobody knows. So that line is so thin. So at the end of the day, manage your risk. Always have a plan with this shit and just continue to build the thesis. You know, like you shouldn't be 70% of your portfolio into something because a CEO tweeted out that they have goats that are going to drink the water at halftime. You know, at the end of the day, like you need to build up a thesis around that. And at the end of the day, if your thesis is just based on a few points or based on, you know, a hope and a dream, then you're probably going to get smoked.
Yeah, and another beautiful thing about the speculation and rumor, though, that you can think about not always be like, this is a bad thing, and we kind of mentioned it last week, is the buy the rumor, sell the news. And speculation can lead to these run-ups, even if it's not real. The news could be like, hey, this shit was never happening, you know? But at the same time, that can still lead to everyone getting excited the same way it might have gotten you excited. Like at the same time, this news may never come out, but as long as people are going to think it is, you know, you can take that to your advantage too. If you see people, hey, you know, if people believe they're going to have 44, you know, Serena Williams and shit like on board, you might as well just try and, you know, play your hand at it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm all for, you know, trading into hype and stuff. I mean, I think it's great. I mean, one of the best strategies out there is shorting a company that goes on different financial networks and stuff that you know, like for instance, like I remember the NFT craze, and it was a certain show or whatever had an NFT CEO on, and basically he didn't say squat, and the stock went from like up 12% to down 5% on the day. Like that was a no-brainer. Like, you know, once the interview was over, I was like, that was it. You know, there's no reason for this thing to be up 12%. The CEO didn't say anything. You know, that so it comes down to, you know, really just being cognizant, building the thesis, and not getting over biased one way or another. I mean, there's been plenty of times where like I've talked myself out of trades that were just like, hey dude, like they're gonna release this product on December 1st. This product's gonna bring in $200 million a year. They have $100 million in cash, like they're fine. And I've talked myself out of certain like, you know, I don't want to say layup, but certain layup trades for being, you know, trying not to be biased to the long side. And but then on the same token, you know, there's been more times than I want to admit that I'm sitting there on the other side, super long biased, like, you know, ready to get like a 10,000% gainer on one individual company, stuff like that. You know, it's specifically having to do with court cases, because a lot of people believe that, you know, especially with court cases, if the stocks got hit because of a court case, you know, people usually believe that if the company's in court, then they have a chance to win. So that's one of the ones where like I usually see people get smoked the worst, because that's something where you can pin it on your head. Like it comes down to like he said, she said in high school. And and that's the thing is that it's more of like a, most of the time what I've noticed is it's more of like a coin toss, if anything, with those different things. But from the trading perspective, as Dan was saying, you know, yeah, trade the hype, you know, but don't swing it, you know, take your meat of the move and be out before everyone else. You know, like JP Morgan, whatever, or I think it was Ray Dalio, JP Morgan, yeah, said, yeah, I think it was Jamie Dimon said, you know, I made a fortune selling too early or something. And with something where, you know, your thesis is only like, I'm joining the hype for this 5%. Great, join the hype for that 5%, but be out before everybody else tries to get out. Done.
Yeah, and another thing to kind of, for a, you know, low risk, but still have the reward on the table, you see these rumors, you're like, hey, I don't know if I want to hop in, whatever. You can buy puts and calls, and if the rumor falls through and they're like, hey, that shit was never going to happen, that shit is going to tank tremendously. And if it's like, hey, this shit is happening, guess what? It's going to do the thing everyone hoped it does more, was hoping it would do more than likely. So it's, you kind of have that wiggle room with, you know, look, obviously I'm not telling you put a lot of fucking money in random puts and options and calls for this, but you know, it's a decent strategy where you can still kind of get some cash out of it and you know, not really have to worry about it. You think about like Lucid, whenever it was at 60, I mean, crazy, it's back there now, but the day it hit 60 and the news everyone was hoping for came out, and what happened? Tanked down to like 40 that day.
Yeah, Yeah. Yeah. And to your point about the put and call strategy, you know, there's a guy who I'm pretty good friends with, Rich Hamilton. I mean, he does that strategy with SPY in the Fed meeting almost every single Fed meeting. So he'll literally just have both orders and he'll take, you know, some puts, some calls, you know, same Greeks. And essentially, his belief is that the first move is usually not the correct move. So whichever one comes into the green, based on what Powell and the Fed say, he usually sells for profit. And then the other one he keeps because he believes that the actual move is coming. So like that is a real strategy. And I mean, listen, if you do it, if you time it effectively and you got those quick fingers, you know, and I mean, the first few are going to be odd because it's because you're doing the quick switch and maybe you don't have the confidence and you get faked out. But I mean, you know, you can bank. I mean, you can make serious cash.
Yeah, no, it's definitely one of those things where you got to watch out because there are rumors everywhere in the stock world. I think it's one of those things where it's very clear within your first week. You got to find the people you believe. And you got to find the people whose TD is wrong. And that's one thing that we always say with like, you know, when you're that's one of the things where it's the paper trading and stuff can really come in handy. Yeah, it might not do with the emotions too well, but you can learn about like these people on Twitter or whoever that you see that gives out these calls, why they're giving it out. And then obviously doing your own DD. And that's like what's tough about a lot of these things is when it is a rumor, like, well, I can't fucking find this anyways. Like you'll be looking at the CEO's stepson's Facebook and checking if like where he's going to college is near Amazon's plant, you know? So it's a tough route to go.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
And before we get to our giveaway winners from last episode, you wanted to talk about some El Salvador shit that when I Googled El Salvador, nothing came up except a country flag. So, yeah, let's hear it.
Yeah, so this news is like almost a week old, I want to say. So there's two things. One, El Salvador plans to build a Bitcoin city at the base of a volcano with the cryptocurrency used to fund the project, its president announced. Okay, that I just think is cool. You know, like I just think that that's a really cool thing.
Elon Musk is going to move there. They're yeah, all riding, you know, like, fucking the little blonde dogs.
Yeah, I mean,
Shiba Inus or whatever the fuck.
This feels so odd because like this. So this is a direct quote. Residential areas, commercial areas, service museums, entertainment, bars, restaurants, airport, rail, everything devoted to Bitcoin, the 40-year-old said. Speaking about the president, I just think that that's cool. And real quick, let me find.
Yeah, dude. Until the volcano erupts.
Yeah, that would suck. Oh, okay.
How many satoshis do you need to solve that issue?
Okay, the country this year became the first to adopt Bitcoin as national currency. It plans to sell $1 billion in U.S. dollar-denominated 10-year bonds with a coupon of 6.5%. Half of that money would be used to buy Bitcoin to hold for 5 years, and the rest would be to, you know, as we said, to fund construction projects related to Bitcoin. 6.5%? That's insane. Yeah, so like, I mean, they truly, I mean, at this point, like, you truly
need Bitcoin.
Just seems
like he's going
Bitcoin.
All in. They're just trying
That's
to get themselves
I mean.
In
like,
the news.
Like you're crippling.
When was the last time you heard anything about El Salvador except for this Bitcoin stuff?
That's what I mean. Like, this
no
kind of feels
El
like a last stand on a, no. I mean, it truly, like, from a fundamental, I mean, you can go through their books and, well, you know, some of their books. And for this country, it just feels so like a last stand economy before like what is this? Like you feel like you're so close to the cliff of being Venezuela that you that you just decide to make this massive bet, but it doesn't feel right because at the end of the day, like the people that are like your people are the ones that are going to struggle. If it doesn't go well. Well, that's what I'm, but I mean, from like a risk to reward standpoint, yes, your reward is insane, but your risk, I mean, your bonds are going to be inside the U.S. denomination. And
he's also depending on other countries. Like if America makes their own cryptocurrency, Bitcoin's tanking regardless, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, like it's true, like you need, and Bitcoin's, you know, Bitcoin, like it's not like Bitcoin's
new,
at like 5,000.
Relatively new, you know?
Yeah, you know?
It's but 5 years. The thing is, like they're making like this big gamble off something that's like 10 years old or, you know?
That's what I mean. Like, if he did this 10 years ago when, you know, Bitcoin was at what, 1,000? You know, fine. But
Bitcoin
then I guess
10 years ago was like 4.
But then I guess I'm going to be the dumbass in 10 years if Bitcoin's trading at like, you know, a million, you know, I'm going to be the dumbass who's like, oh, like 10 years ago, it was so expensive when now it's cheap. But it just feels like it just feels here like there's so much more potential risk than reward. You know,
it's
not
bought
like
it on the dip.
That's what I mean. Like, it's not even like Bitcoin was at like 20,000 like earlier this year. You're like, it's tripled in a few months. The first thing that comes to mind is reckless. That's truly what I think of.
Or innovative, depends on how it goes.
No, because the risk is too, at a 6.5% coupon, that just feels reckless. And also, like, the other thing, and this comes back to like that infrastructure and mining part of it. Again, there's, you know, Bitcoin has a, that's, you know, it's supply and demand. Bitcoin only has a certain amount of tokens or coins, whatever. And so, you know, every time that a new coin is found or mined, whatever, you know, the chances of getting another one decreases. So my point to that is that why are you going to spend $500 million if, you know, there was 10 times the amount of coins 5-10 years ago? It just feels like
the amount of coins that you make is what gets lower whenever a halving comes. It's like you get a certain amount per like time mined, and it gets cut in half every halving. So I don't know like what their mining plan is, if they're mining or just buying that shit. But I mean, if they're mining it, yeah, obviously that's going to get less lucrative over time.
I think that's
less,
what it said. Yeah. Yeah, like 500 million is going to be to it.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously. But I mean, at the same time, like, that's why whenever Doug Bonaparte was mining the shit, it was so much money because it was so many halvenings ago.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. No, exactly. I don't know. It just feels reckless to me. But you know, I'm sure I'll be eating my words in 10 years.
Yeah, no, Bitcoin. I mean, dude, the thing that makes me think Bitcoin's here to stay, the fact that the Staples Center is now the crypto.com center. I'm like, well, fuck, it's a Staples Center for 20 fucking years. So, all right, we did have a giveaway. And the extremely difficult entry cost was a retweet. So let me see what we can do here for change some lives with $100 and a couple $50 bills. So I will just go ahead and do the retweet. Just gonna search it randomly, going down the list. I'm gonna go all the way to the bottom, then go up so I'm not missing anyone. And boom. Picked Real Stevie C. Real Stevie C. I'm gonna just screenshot, I'll shoot you a DM. And you know, which card did you decide from your responses? And you can pick him, and then we'll pick a quote tweet as well.
Yeah, pick a quote tweet, you know.
Did anyone give you a car recommendation that you like?
I did like, there was this 2012 Audi R8 for like $80,000. I really liked that one. And then someone told me that I could buy it, that they felt that we could be a benefit to each other because he had a 1994 Honda Accord, and he feels like I would be the type of guy to drive a 1994 Honda Accord. And,
okay, I see the R8. That's the great deal. I'm looking for the Honda Accord comment. Let's see. '92 Honda Accord will always be the greatest car in history, reliable, and you're not going to find a girl trying to steal it. Anything you own if you rock up to a date in it. Looking at you, Dip TV. So that's your choice?
Yeah, that would be my choice.
All right, well, that's you, Ducks and Stonks. And lastly, Was a quote tweet from Joey Blowholy. Joey Saraceno 1. Saraceno. Sorry, I'm sure I botched the fuck out of that. You guys shoot some DMs. The first one, Stevie, you'll get the 100. Another two will get the 50s. And we'll reach out. We'll get in touch. And congratulations on winning something, because I never have. And we will see you all Sunday. And let's have a great December.
Pennies Going in Raw is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy. And we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.